Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my heart, make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
First reading is from The Divine Life, Volume 2 by Papa Ram Dass. Death is false. My thought flies like a bird carrying the message of peace to all the worlds. A light goes out of my eyes that illuminates the entire cosmos. My heart responds to the rhythm of a heavenly music that resounds through all space. The angels hover around me. The devas of the other worlds, the embodiments of the omnipresent spirit. They look human, but they are my God in so many forms. The deva, man, bird, and beast are all the varied shapes taken by my God. They are all sweet and good. I see him and am lost in him. I hear him and am attuned with him. I touch him and become one with him. In all planes of life, I am united with him. With outstretched arms, he beckons me and I rush to him. I am caught in his ecstatic embrace. I shut my eyes in the intoxication of God, of joy. Oh, beloved, that is all I could say. Oh, my Lord, my God, my Supreme Mother, I am eternally thine. I am thine self. How strange. I am thyself, yet I am thine. When I sit silent with eyes closed, I behold all the worlds and beyond in me, and myself in all the worlds and beyond. Whenever I am before anybody, I look at him as myself. His movements are mine. When he talks and acts, it is all myself. Death is false. Every particle of the body in all its states is ever intensely alive, dust or ashes, soul, body, universe, all beings and things are all one. Matter is spirit, spirit is matter, all is he and his expression. Spirit is still, but it sings sweetly, and universes are born. They live in the infinite ocean of the spirit, like ice floating on water. All minds and all bodies, you are dear to me. You are made of my substance. My substance is omnipresent, immutable spirit. Still, there are ripples in me. They are the planets, stars, and stellar spheres, ever in motion, whirling through the glowing, etheric atmosphere. All hail to thee, the one truth, the one reality. And from David, why next reincarnation? Now, now, now. Realization is now. You have that state of realized consciousness in you right now, as great as it has ever been, as great as it will ever be right now, if you could accept it. But you see, our minds will not accept it. It wants to stay out and play out here. It will not accept it, and it is because of that we don't get it. But if we had the kind of concentration and dedication that said, it is mine now, and whatever I'm experiencing is God experience, and every moment what I have is God experience, then we eliminate that division that is false. And we immediately have peace. We immediately have joy. It is here now, and it is as great as it has ever been. Realization is not a state to be created. It is not something we have to make. It is pre-existent. It has always been, it is now, and it will always be. And from David's blog, in Freud's psychological model, the superego is your consciousness, and the ideals you have imbibed from your parents and the world around you. For many, these ideals can be completely over the top, meaning you believe you should already know things and be skilled at doing things that you cannot fulfill, acting as a bludgeon that constantly hammers you for not being more perfect. When in balance, these ideals can positively make you aspire for and achieve great things in life. Aspiration is an asset. Bludgeoning is bad. To find the sweet spot in which you are energized for higher achievement but avoid a self-beating, you must pay attention to when you cross that line into self-castigation. This sweet spot can be thought of as a skillful learner in life. There are many areas in which you become skillful, and due to karma, some come easier than others. In an earlier time of life, I was backpacking around Europe. I ended up in the Canary Islands, living in a beach community. I was learning how to body surf, using the human body like a surfboard. Finding a likely wave, I used my arms to paddle and gain speed, so that I could ride the wave into shore. The air and water were warm. It was fun to catch a wave and ride it in. I thought I was gaining some skill when a wave taught me otherwise. It was a great wave. I was on top of it, and it was really moving along. Suddenly, the wave broke underneath me, and I shot out past the wave into midair. I felt like a cartoon character that finds itself suspended in the air, knowing that it is about to take a painful fall, and fall I did, down on the hard-packed sand as the wave crashed down on top of me. My nose and arm were quite scraped up by the force of the wave, driving me into the sandpaper beach. Clearly, I was in an outdoor classroom learning body surfing skills, and I was being taught a painful lesson by the wave. Now, the superego could have beaten me up over making this mistake, or I could have blamed the wave as for behaving as it did, or I could have fearfully never gone out again. The other alternative was to analyze what I did, consult with others, and learn to avoid such painful outcomes. I chose the latter and worked on identifying a wave that was about to break in the way mine had, and pulled back at the right time to be a skillful learner. The last option of being a skillful learner did not come naturally for me. Somehow I came into this world with the idea that I should already know everything before I had a chance to learn it. It is a strange notion when you think about it, but it was strongly embedded in me. So I would fake it until I made it, ashamed for anyone to see me taking learning steps. I could pick up many things quickly, which helped me maintain the illusion that I didn't need learning steps, and if something did not come easily, then I avoided it. Of course, none of this really served me well, and most of all, it did not allow me the joy of beginning something new, making mistakes along the way, learning from the mistakes, and gradually becoming more skillful. It took me a lot of years to be simple, to have childlike innocence when interacting with life. And the spiritual field is fraught with ideals for superego to plaster up on the mind's walls and hold up standards that do not allow for this process of learning. Again, it is wonderful and needful to have ideas to aspire to in order to grow. But when those same ideals are used to bludgeon you and for not living up to some perfection, they become harmful. To abandon your ideals is to stagnate and to mentally flagellate yourself for not living up to those ideas is not only a waste of time and energy, but it is also a destructive force. The ideal is to become simple, sincere, to be dedicated and strive for your higher ideals, all the time being a learning machine, becoming more skillful in living up to those ideals with determination and a positive focus that allows you to grow in amazing ways. Learn to identify that sweet spot where you hold up the highest and most transforming ideals, then be skillful in life. Be right on the learning edge that yields the greatest benefit to you and those around you. Sure, you must demand more from yourself. Strive to be more. This is absolutely necessary to make progress. But keep it positive, close to home, and take joy when you note progress. And when you fall short of your lofty goals, take notes to learn from your experience. Learn with love and joy in your heart. And in doing so, you will draw invisible forces to aid you in fulfilling the tasks you have assigned for yourself in this life. You cannot make yourself perfect through self-will, but through valiant and persistent spiritual effort, you can touch the fabric of God's being. And in touching perfection, you are perfected, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Matthew 5:48. Note, we are currently guests of Corliss at the campground she manages on the Skykomish River. I would say we are camping, but with marble floors and granite countertops in our coach, it may give the wrong impression. The new term is now called glamping, glamorous camping. Be assured, it is the coach that is glamorous. In meditation this morning, I was asking God a few questions, and one thing that had come to my mind is the idea of Christ being the only Son of God, and what was that about in particular? And the image that came to me was the idea that Christ was God's beloved Son, His only Son. And thinking about Swami Satchidananda's birthday yesterday and how so many of us felt, both from David and Swamiji, that we were especially beloved in their eyes. And how many people I talked to that have had that sensation of, yes, but I was special. You know, I felt that specially special thing from either David, Swamiji, or both. And how that's the image that God gave me of why Christ was His only begotten Son. One of the pieces of that metaphorical puzzle. That we feel that perfect love that's meant only for us. Krishna also gave that experience to the gopis and broke himself into 1,000 pieces to be with each one of them individually, exactly as they dreamed. I'd like us to take a moment to just feel that experience of being God's only beloved Son. Put yourself into that place. Everything else disappears, and it's only you, only God. That oneness of spirit. When it's perfect attention only on you, to no one else, not in the room, not in the world, not in creation. His divine spark into only you. And the ego comes in and tries to deny it. Remind yourself of that promise. Let yourself expand in that knowledge. Soften and open. And allow that love to flow to you without judgment, without restriction. Lighting up every cell of your body. I was thinking about preparing for this morning and us coming together for what would traditionally be our holiday gathering, but 6 weeks early. Thinking about how powerful that image is of coming together now to prepare for the birth of the Christ. Even before the time of the Advent. What do we need to do to prepare? We have friends that have a beautiful dahlia garden, and Greg and I planted 3 or 4 dahlias a year or two ago, probably last year. I think it was 2 years ago. And they get lush, and they get a few flowers on them, and they're okay. Yeah. The first year they gave us quite a few flowers, and this past year not so many. And we've gone a few times to visit our friends that have this big, beautiful, just yards and yards of dahlias. I think they have 100 or 150 different types of dahlias. And they're just abundant, and each one is different, and each one is just lush and filled with flowers all summer long once they start to bloom. And we've gone, and they've given us tours of how they care for these dahlias, and I was thinking about how that's how we have to work with preparing ourselves for the birth of the Christ within. At this time of year, the dahlias have gone dormant, and they, about a week or two ago, they cut them off just before the first frost and cut off all the green. And they leave that in a compost heap. And then when the first hard frost comes, they dig them up and separate them out. And there's often 3 or 4 times as many bulbs as they had planted in the winter or in the spring the year before. And it takes quite a bit of work to separate out the ones that are going to be successful. And so they have to look at them carefully and separate out the ones that were the originals and maybe are still strong and full of life. Or perhaps there's new tubers that have grown off the edges that are showing more promise, and it's time to discard the old ones. And then they plant those again in the spring, the strongest bulbs. They share with their friends the extra bulbs that have potential. And then in the spring, about May, when the soil gets to just the right temperature, they bury them again in enriched soil. And as they come up, they watch for which shoots are the strongest and cut away the ones that aren't necessary. Tie them up carefully. And so each day there's work to be done with these dahlias when they come up, just as our practice requires that. And at different seasons, there's different work to be done. And I always think when we start to get into the dark times of the winter, in the past, that's been a really difficult time for me, and I tend to be tamasic and just want to climb under a blanket and watch shows and not do much, eat too much, those kinds of activities. And that's the time that we have to be really laying the foundation down, working with that internal self, seeing what roots are bearing fruit and which roots it's time to trim off and discard. Which pieces of our lives we pass on to someone else to take care of. And then carefully, carefully protect what's been grown in the growing season. And allow it to rest. But in a, as Larry said, a vigilant state. Just waiting for when the exact right time is to spring forth again. So this time of darkness, before the light starts to conquer the darkness, It's our time for our inner work. That quietness. And to not give way to a state of lethargy, a state of depression, but to see that as a time of rest, a time of inner growth, waiting for the perfect moment for the Christ to be born. That light to come to fruition. So how do we do that? How do we use that time of darkness? We know we have 6 weeks before. 6 weeks is a metaphorical time. We're cast into that time of darkness purposefully. We are assured that light will win. How do we best use that time? And we'll be grateful for the struggle that comes with birth. The discomfort, the ill ease, knowing that what's to come is only life. Can we have faith in that? When our great ones have left us and we're not feeling them, can we have faith that they're there calling us home? I think we are all only here because we believe that promise. We've had a personal experience with David, our mother, one of their disciples. We just can't shake the idea that what they've told us is the truth. There's really no other reason for being on this path. There's no donuts after service like we had as a child in Catholic Church. There's no shame of not showing up in some biblical churches. There's only the idea that we have no place else to go. So we come together to support each other in this journey. Those of us who have been made ministers are certainly no greater than anyone else. We just agreed to try and serve as best we can. We're so grateful for all of you for continuing to show up, continuing to be here for one another. It's a singular path that we all have to walk alone, but knowing that there's others going at the same time. The idea that two or more are gathered in the same, I think we've all experienced that. The power of coming together. I'm going to read Papa's words again. Death is false. My thoughts flies like a bird carrying the message of peace to all the worlds. A light goes out of my eyes that illuminates the entire cosmos. My heart responds to the rhythm of a heavenly music that resounds through all space. The angels hover around me, the devas of other worlds, the embodiments of the omnipresent spirit. They look human, but they are all my God in so many forms. The deva, man, bird, and beast are all the varied shapes taken by my God. They are all sweet and good. I see him and I am lost in him. I hear him and I am attuned with him. I touch him and become one with him. In all planes of life, I am united with him. With outstretched arms, he beckons me and I rush to him, and I am caught in his ecstatic embrace. I shut my eyes in the intoxication of joy. Oh, beloved, that is all I could say. O my Lord, my God, my Supreme Mother, I am eternally thine, I am thyself. How strange. I am thyself, yet I am thine. When I sit silent with eyes closed, I behold all the worlds and beyond in me, and myself in all the worlds and beyond. Whenever I am before anybody, I look at him as myself. His movements are mine. When he talks and acts, it is all myself. Death is false. Every particle of the body in all its states is ever intensely alive, dust or ashes. Soul, body, universe, all beings and things are all one. Matter is spirit, spirit is matter. All is he and his expression. Spirit is still, but it sings sweetly, and universes are born. They live in the infinite ocean of the spirit like ice floating on water. All minds and all bodies, you are dear to me. You are made of my substance. My substance is omnipresent Immutable spirit, still there are ripples in me. They are the planets, stars, and stellar spheres, ever in motion, whirling through the glowing etheric atmosphere. All hail to thee, the one truth, the one reality.
Mary, if there's anything you want to share. Well, one thing I love the idea of the Father having an only begotten Son. That's the only begotten idea of creation. But the other reflection of that is the disciples look through to God by seeing the Guru. And as Swami Satchitananda taught us, we should all, each of us, see our own Guru as the greatest Guru. Because as we do that, we then can see through that portal that the Guru is. And we can see God in that fashion. And that we need the Guru to be able to know where to look. It is interesting, as you point out, that it is started in your thoughts for saying, why is God saying it's only begotten Son? From God's perspective, it's all that there is just one. But it encompasses our constituent parts, each of us a part or one cell of God's, of the Son, and that He sees it all. He knows when a sparrow falls. He knows every aspect of our life by seeing one thing. Mother taught us to not imagine one or two. I think I said this recently in one of our Wednesday talks, and Mother said that, I said to her that infinity, the two logs of the infinity symbol represent a duality, and once you have two, you have an infinite number. But she said, if you even think of one, you imply duality. She showed a higher thought. God is only expressing. He doesn't see even a single, doesn't see it that way in a single fashion. And Papa has such a wonderful way of discussing it, doesn't he?
Speaks from God's reference.
Yeah. He tries to show us the mystery, and it's, as he says, it's not normal. You can't express the inexpressible. But why is that mystery there? That's the conundrum we're given at birth. We're given at birth this notion that there is separation.
It's the first step back closer. It's if we didn't know that there was separation until we become aware that we're experiencing separation. We can't make our way back.
Right. Yeah, that's the genius of Mother's description that sin is feeling that separation. That's the only sin. And we do insist upon it, don't we? We don't feel that we could be seen as part of God. We, in some respects, don't want to own it, I suppose. We don't see it. Shall we say that? Closing prayer?
Have our closing prayer. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My
heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Ooh.